And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. 5 minutes past nine on this Friday the 15th of August. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here on Highland Radio. And it is a wedge show as always. Our Friday panel is assembled. I'll introduce them to you very shortly. As you heard a little earlier on the show, we also have $2,500 to give away a little later on in the programme. I'll tell you more about that and so much more besides. We want you involved in the conversation, of course. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 07491 25000. If you prefer, it's emails to comments at highlandradio.com, and of course watch the show. Go to YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, on your phone, your laptop, your smart TV, your Fire Stick, and we're on Facebook as well and on the X platform. John McAteer is editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune. Good morning, John.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you keeping?
I've just been out walking.
Very good. Where?
Just walked the dog.
Why?
For half an hour.
Why?
The dog likes to get a walk in the morning.
All right, I see her there. She's looking sprightly anyway.
Do you not like getting a walk in the morning?
Getting up for me seems something of an achievement. Catherine Noon's lawyer and former Fine Gael senator. Catherine, lovely to see you.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. The scenery not quite as nice as the last time we had you on, or I was on with you.
Oh, it's nice. It's nice here too, look.
Well, that's beautiful too, in a way, isn't it?
Lux Willie, yeah.
Yeah, Willie. Just go to the end of your garden and cast me fly in there and see what I might
get. Yeah, exactly. See how you get on.
Eimear McGuinness, who is manager of Donegal Mart. Hi, Eimear.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Lovely. Great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us. How's everything in beautiful Killybegs?
Oh, lovely. Lovely. Excellent. Very peaceful.
Do your double doors let much of a draft in? Not one going off track. They don't. All right. Well, we have a set in the house and you might as well.
Might shortly.
Okay. Right. Okay. Well, Taoiseach Simon Harris has said there's a great sense of shock in Fine Gael following Mairead McGuinness's decision to withdraw from the presidential race on health grounds. In a statement released yesterday afternoon, Mrs. McGuinness said the decision was not taken lightly and followed a stay in hospital last week. Independent TD Catherine Connolly, who launched her bid for the Irish last month, said Mrs. McGuinness's decision came as a shock. She's now the only official candidate in the race. And first and foremost, we wish Mairead McGuinness, or I wish Mairead McGuinness, the very best in whatever health challenges she has or is facing. I'll start with you, Catherine, if that's okay. You know, this is a shock. Mairead McGuinness, a very high profile person, and would have been very much in with a shout. Obviously, she's felt she's had to make that decision. And I think it's come as a shock to everyone, really, in Fine Gael. They just simply didn't see this coming, but primarily, obviously, concerned about her well-being.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think she had a super chance to become president. And I think we're all very sad that she has, you know, these health issues that have clearly, you know, she's made a very difficult decision. I mean, you can imagine how conflicted a person would be where they're polling as being kind of favourite to win an election and they're a seasoned politician all their lives in politics in one way or another, and they're left with no choice but to pull out of the race. It's very difficult one for Mairead on a personal level, and like you, I wish her the best. And it does, I suppose, throw the whole election up in the air, in a sense. It's anyone's to win now, and there's only one declared candidate. So it does make for an interesting few weeks for political correspondents who are probably a bit bored during the summer with the lack of activity in the Dáil. So yeah, it'll be an interesting few weeks to see who comes out of the woodwork now, and even in Fine Gael, you know, there are a few potentials. So it'll be interesting, and the time is tight.
Yeah, and it might be one of those that had already perhaps ruled themselves out that might be or they might try and sort of talk them back into the race, because there are still some very, you know, high profile, well known, broad appeal candidates in there.
No, definitely, possibly. I mean, it is a difficult thing to declare that you're not going to go for an election, probably, and then come back and say, actually, you know, my heart is in it now. So that is a dynamic, but not one that you couldn't explain, I suppose. So, yeah, there are at least five or six potential candidates. So it'll be interesting to see who actually makes a run for it.
Yeah, John McAteer. I mean, obviously, as we've just mentioned, Catherine Connolly, the only name in there, you know, Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin, and now Fine Gael, really, I suppose, have yet to really properly show their hands. And as we heard from Catherine there, time is tight.
Yeah, well, Mairead McGuinness's decision yesterday was on health grounds. It's a big, big shock to everybody. She was polling well on the Red Sea polls and most all others. She was way ahead of everybody, especially within Fine Gael, because they didn't seem to have any other candidate. Heather Humphreys withdrew. Sean Kelly was the last one to pull out because he was under 10% in the opinion polls and just didn't seem to be going anywhere. He's based in the South constituency for as an MEP and has been there for a number of years. Mairead McGuinness has been there as an MEP since 2004, and more laterally as a commissioner, a high profile name. Surprisingly, now I suppose nobody was nominated. The rest all withdrew, so that formal process had still to be gone through.
Could that be as a mark of respect to Ms. McGuinness and her popularity, and perhaps for the sad reasons that she's pulled out, maybe those that ruled themselves out before might be more interested, especially with the full weight of the party behind them, with Mairead McGuinness out of the race now?
I suppose if you're not running in the opinion polls beyond 10-12%, the fact that she has pulled out, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to pick up all that slack. Mm-hmm. That will take some weeks to unravel. Fine Gael doesn't have an immediate obvious candidate other than Sean Kelly, who was the last one to pull out. He is an MEP. Who else is there? Heather Humphreys has, like, she withdrew her name at the time. I don't know if she'd want to come back in again. But Fine Gael have choices.
Choices, and I think Catherine was going to come back in there before we bring Emma in. They have more choices than Fianna Fáil or Sinn Féin, for an example.
Far more. There's no candidate at all. Mary Lou MacDonald has been spoken about in Sinn Féin.
But that's that would be a massive gamble for that party, because if she were to fall short.
Yeah, and then Fianna Fáil have no obvious candidate, and there's been kind of talk of various non-politicians that they could pull in. In Fine Gael, I think there's Frances Fitzgerald, Simon Coveney, Enda Kenny, Heather Humphreys, as was mentioned, and probably one or two others that aren't coming to mind. So, like, there is a dearth of people who have what is most needed, which is household name recognition and, you know, a pedigree in politics and are well known. So I would say definitely there's choice there. Mm. But there can be somebody now who will come up in the next few weeks that you never thought of, that you think, God, yeah, they'd be a brilliant candidate. But it's just maybe, you know, they've been holding back for whatever reason. And certainly Mairead not being in the fray. I mean, a lot of people were talking about Michael McDool. Did he decide not to run because Mairead was such a good candidate? He wouldn't be one to put himself up for an election where he wouldn't have a chance of winning. So maybe he'll decide to run. I mean, it's literally anyone. I mean, this guy, nobody heard of him, Gareth, whatever his name is, who's he's a pharma millionaire. I personally never heard of him before.
Already now, the scrutiny has begun on him and his companies and his background, as happens. And I wonder.
And it's funny because people think, politicians, you don't need to be a politician to be a presidential candidate. Oh, it's not really a political job. Sorry, it is a political job. And Gareth has learned in the last few days that having the skills that are required around just simply answering questions and knowing the level of scrutiny, you know, it is a profession in that sense, you know, definitely.
I think Eamonn McGuinness, we heard from Catherine Noon referencing, you know, political journalists having something to write about. I mean, the speculation for me is getting a wee bit boring now. I'd start, maybe my interest might build a little more if we had some, you know, established candidates in there and some idea of where we're at. What are Fianna Fáil going to do? Where can Sinn Féin go? Who else could emerge that we're not necessarily aware of just about now, Emer?
That's it. We don't really know until we hear a few more names. As they said, we did talk about Pat the Cope. I thought he'd be an excellent choice for our president. And I don't agree. I do not think that you have to be politically minded to run for the president of Ireland. We have so many wonderful people and people. I do understand what you're saying, Catherine, with regard to the scrutiny and everything that goes with it. But I don't think you have to be politically aligned to be a great president for the country.
I think it's
I think it's more actually maybe
if you've got a political background, you understand the realities. You chuck your name into the ring, next thing you know, you get the scrutiny.
Yeah, you get scrutiny if you put your head out there to do anything in this country. I'm really looking forward to seeing who will come forward, because I do think it was a one-horse race. Everybody just assumed, and people were probably afraid to go forward against Mairead McGuinness, and I do wish her the best with her health and her recovery, whatever she's going through. Do I think she would have been, would I have been giving her my vote? I don't think so. I think she was doing really well where she was. And I do think she's a good politician. Putting her in as president, yeah, that wouldn't have been... I was looking forward to seeing who else was coming forward.
So. Somebody within Fianna Fáil is bound to come forward. I mean, they've got Bertie Ahern. I mean, what is wrong with Bertie Ahern? Are they afraid of him?
You tried to put the cat among the pigeons this morning, John.
Is that a...
Absolutely.
Is that a rhetorical question? I'm only joking.
Bertie Ahern is running at 15% in the polls. The reality is within Fianna Fáil...
Is it possible, right, that, you know, you put someone forward like Bertie Ahern, and we're talking about scrutiny, and he is a link to the past party. Does that then end up, though, having some sort of toxicity on the current Fianna Fáil party if everything that he's been associated with or the controversies is dragged up as well? Is that not a consideration, John?
It might awaken them from their slumbers. They haven't discussed their candidate at parliamentary party meetings, as far as I'm concerned. So, therefore, there's no way for the likes of Pat the Cope to have his view aired in there. This is all going to happen in September. You know, the election is not that far away. It's going to be around that week of the 26th of October, if the last two elections were anything to go by. Fianna Fáil don't have an obvious candidate outside of Micheál Martin, who's not going to be going for the presidency, and that's that. I wonder, were they thinking about going as a joint candidate with Mairead McGuinness and just leaving it at that, you know?
I
wouldn't think so either, but I mean, they haven't made any moves of any kind. That brings us back down to where Sinn Féin at.
But that also could be a tactic. Why put someone out there now, really, when everyone's on holidays and chilling and not interested in this stuff? You know, hold your fire, have a short, sharp run in. Maybe it's tactical.
You know, as Catherine said there, this Gareth Sheridan came on the scene this week. He's an entrepreneur. He's the boss of Nutriband. We never heard tell of him. He's probably well known in commercial circles and business circles. He's probably better known outside of Ireland than he is here. He claims that he could have as many as six councillors backing him. Now, if you don't know a candidate, face recognition is one of the big, big things in politics. Bertie Ahern's going to win that race, hands down. He has been through all the tribunals. He came out of them, maybe not totally unscathed, but who would ever come out of a tribunal?
Would he get the votes, John?
I don't honestly know. He's still quite popular out there when his name is mentioned.
I remember a time, it didn't matter what he did. My parents weren't Fianna Fáil. It didn't matter what it is. The more scrutiny he got, the more sympathy he seemed to draw from a generation. Is that still there? But Emer too, you know, like, we have to be realistic about what the role of president is, you know, and obviously we've had a long spell now with President Michael D. Higgins. You know, are people going to be motivated to vote for a billionaire business person, really, given the...
I wonder who do we want,
you know, the person has to fit
Conor
the role
McGregor,
as well.
Maybe.
You
want somebody who's going to represent you well, who you're not going to be embarrassed by, that's going out to, you know, meet people. That's what you want, somebody who has a really good reputation, who's a really good people person, who we're proud of.
Who can exercise well in the ceremonial role? I don't think the public want someone who's controversial. Their powers are limited. They want someone who's presidential, don't they?
Well, that's what I was saying with regards to Mairead McGuinness. Like, is she not a very important politician? Is she not wasted at?
She's gone from the commissionership, though. Michael McGrath has that commissionership now. So So, you know, she was actually finished in politics as such, unless she ran for something else. So I suppose this would be a natural progression for her in that sense.
Yeah.
But like at the same time, she's been out of Ireland, Catherine, for a good while, and yet on the opinion poll, she's way, way up there. She's the best that Fine Gael has to offer, so anybody else is going to be second best to that.
That's true.
Like at the end of the day, there seems to be a reluctance on named, you know, there aren't that many big names. Michael Flatley, I don't see him going anywhere. It's hard to see him dancing his way into it. Like, at the end of the day...
I mean, that's a little bit of self-public publicity as well, isn't it? I mean...
I don't know.
I mean, you know...
Would he be a good president? Would you like to see him as the president?
Oh, I this sounds terrible, but the sort of... It sounds like he's pretending to put on an accent sometimes, but anyway, I'm not sure that matters.
He's like a caricature of himself. Yeah.
You know, well, but I mean,
Oliver Callan would always be a good stand-in for him.
Huh?
Oliver Callan would always be a good stand-in for him.
Well, see, I don't know what Oliver Callan sounds like, because he sounds
brilliant.
Like he's doing an impression.
Absolutely brilliant.
No, but he's so fantastic. Even his own voice sounds like he's like Seth MacFarlane. You don't know what he actually sounds like.
Like, you're sitting here this morning, do we see any candidate there that's going to win the presidency? Is there anybody obvious?
One will come.
Yeah, definitely.
You have nobody down about Killy Beggs, have you, Emer?
No, I don't think so.
Mary Coughlin's the closest, isn't she? She's already thrown
but
her hand
Mary
out,
seems to have opted out of politics. She's too busy in the GAA.
Yeah, but you have to think about someone's national... draw as well.
Well, Bertie, I would agree with John that Bertie definitely has the profile, and
in a sense,
maybe he's been through the ringer in terms of scrutiny over the years. That would there be the same level, because there's a kind of acceptance of his slight dodginess.
Well, he might have to suffer a week of that, writing the same stuff, you know.
Yeah, he's so adept at kicking things back, and he has that likability factor, which I think is a much underestimated commodity, where...
Bertie Ahern versus Enda Kenny would be a fascinating conflict.
I think Enda Kenny would go very well as well.
He's another one of these politicians that people like.
Yeah, he's a very likeable person, and it never ceases to amaze me how much people... Or not cease to amaze me, but it strikes me that people have really underestimated Enda Kenny over the years when you think of what was achieved in that difficult time, you know, bearing in mind that I suppose I come at it looking through a different prism to other people. But, you know, he is really well liked internationally. Mm. Like, that never ceased to amaze me. That
Eamon Ryan
have really not forgotten Enda Kenny. The Americans loved him, you know, and I think people have a quiet respect for him, you know.
So. Eamon Ryan is incredibly popular outside.
They always had respect for him. He was a countryman, and that Dublin four set never accepted him. But I mean, Enda Kenny got out and about amongst the people. He was a very hands-on politician. He was down to earth, and he represented the people very, very well through very, very difficult times. He'd be a great candidate.
And Eamer, you know, the reality is there might be some people listening today that might be texting in, can't believe you're talking about Bertie Ahern, or can't believe you're talking about Enda Kenny, I can't believe what they did to this country, or whatever it might be. But that actually is not really how it works. What happens is the people are on the ballot paper and they make a call, they make a decision. Do you know what I mean?
You're looking at a totally different election.
They don't scrutinise every single element of they're just going, all right, okay, I could see Enda Kenny shaking hands Bertie Ahern.
As I say, they're not going to be really decision makers anymore. They're just going to be a representative of our country, a dignitary as such, and meeting people. And you would be voting for somebody who you believe would do that best of their ability. Well, now, I would definitely also have to take in their past and their background. And, yeah, that's why I thought Pat the Cook would be brilliant. So, but I don't know if Pat would give up all he has to...
He would. He told me that.
Did he? Okay. I just think he'd be wonderful. He's a great people person.
John McAteer, obviously. President McAteer sounds good. You've got the dogs. Oh, you've got the dog.
I've got one dog.
Well, you've got the dog. Yeah.
Hardly have a second one.
You're kind of presidential. You come across as that. And you certainly could fit into
that's
that.
That's
so big,
nice of you.
You could fit
you
into
don't,
that.
You don't mean one single word of that, so you don't.
We'll be back with more after the break. A caller says, not a fan of Pat the Cope, but I'd like to see a Donegal man there. Yeah. Another, the president must be seen as above day-to-day politics. Therefore, it's more suited to a business person as opposed to a politician, says another. I think Michael McDougall would make an excellent president. Right pedigree, brilliant thinker. That comes in from Liam in Buncrana. A caller says, a waste of taxpayers' money, jobs for the boys, another big salary for doing nothing, no influence on anything to do what's happening in the country. Roll up, golden egg for a retired minister out to graze for 4 years in splendour.
I don't agree with any of that at all.
I think we have to have roles.
We're used and maybe spoiled with three great presidents, from Mary Robinson, Mary McAleese, and now Michael D. Higgins for the past 14 years. I mean, they've set the bar very, very high. They're neither business people. They just carried the role of the office of presidency to a new level. And they all came out and about amongst the people on a very regular basis. And they became very much of the people, yet at international level. They could go to the United Nations and hold Ireland in the highest esteem. And that is very much of what the role of the president is all about. None of them were business people. They never needed to be. And I think it was Catherine mentioned Michael McDougall there. Mm-hmm. Michael McDougall put his name out probably a bit too early. I think he was hoping that one or other of the two main parties might have approached him about that. That didn't happen. I think Fianna Fáil are probably bogged down on this one. Micheál Martin has made no decision on it. He doesn't have an obvious candidate outside of Bertie Ahern, and I'm just not joking about that. I can't see where they have a candidate. I mean, there was a lot of talk that there was a possibility that Jarlath Burns of the GAA might be a candidate. He ruled that out. There was a time that I think Sinn Féin might have been interested in nominating him. I'm not too sure if that one has passed by or not, because he would be an ideal candidate, given his profile. Outside of Jarlath Burns, I don't see too many other candidates there. I don't see Conor McGregor. I just don't see so many others like that. You know, this nonsense of challenging in the High Court or the Supreme Court the validity of the Constitution insofar as confining the nomination process, that's a non-runner. That's going nowhere.
All right, Emma, just before we move on, is the system fair how one gets on the ballot paper? I know we don't necessarily want a situation, or do we, where there's 250 people listed and, you know, someone registers as, you know, SpongeBob SquarePants or whatever because it's some sort of a protest. I mean, we need...
Justin the Turkey.
Yeah, exactly. We need some structure to it. But should it be easier? Because it does limit, really, the scope for someone to come forward and try and argue their platform.
Probably does, but where would it stop if you didn't have some sort of structure to it? I don't like.
What about if you sort of had to get, you know, you could do an online system and you had to get 50,000 signatures or something? You know, I don't know, something like that that might make it at least feel more accessible.
I do think it is accessible enough. I don't see a problem. I think if you will get the votes and you will get the backing if you're a possible or a suitable candidate, I do believe. As regards Conor McGregor, I can't even imagine anyone voting for him. He is so unsuitable. I get angry when I hear about him. But I do think every other possible good suitable candidate that would go forward would get the backing. So I don't see an issue with the system.
All right, moving on now. And Roland Keaton has used his profile to call for stronger penalties for those convicted of fatal road traffic offences. Very sadly, his brother Kieran, who's 57, was travelling with his wife to see their son play a soccer match when he was killed in July 23 after his vehicle collided with a car driven by a Dean Hart, 22, in County Mayo. Hart from Westmeath was given a 17-month suspended sentence at Castlebar Circuit Court Mayo in February. jury after he pleaded guilty to careless driving causing death. Now, many families in our region can sadly relate very closely to this issue. I'll stay with you, Emer. Is it now time to look at sentencing? I know it's a complex issue and we might lean on Catherine's legal expertise as well in this conversation, because maybe it's not quite as simple as it might seem. But, you know, it seems a very low sentence for such a serious crime, 17 months or a serious issue.
This is probably sensitive for me because I lost my sister to a hit and run accident.
I wasn't aware of that, Emer. I genuinely wasn't aware of that. My apologies and sympathies. And speak as much or as little as you wish in that context.
Yeah, no, I don't... How do I look at it? I suppose it depends. It's not going to bring her back, whatever sentence. Like, the young lad that hit my sister, he was drunk. He left the scene. I suppose he got a sentence. He got 4 years. His family did approach my parents a year or two into a sentence, or after, you know, after he was doing his time, to see would they write a letter or maybe help get him out. My parents did not object. I suppose it depends on how you... Like, he was so sorry for what he did. He was young. I often think it depends on the circumstances. You know, it's not going to bring them back. Is it going to stop young ones going out and speeding? And I don't think so. The length of the sentence, I think more talk and more advertisement of the effects it can have on families is possibly the way to stop it happening. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm caught up on that one.
Yeah, so I suppose it comes down to can we make a direct correlation between tougher sentencing and less of these instances?
I don't. You know, I don't think so. I really do believe that them horrible advertisements that we see on the television, they do sit in. There should probably be more and more of them. When you're driving in the car, they should be on the radio frequently to remind you. I don't know if the sentencing is going to, you know, lessen our deaths on the road. But and I don't think, I do understand when more than most, that like if when you lose somebody, but I don't know if that bitterness of putting them away for 10 years is going to make me feel any better about it.
It's a remarkable insight, and it goes to show how sort of subjective these things are, Emer. Catherine, what's your view? Catherine Noon.
Just to say, Emer, I'm so, so sorry that you went through that. That's really just so tough. And I think you're amazing, the things you've said there, that it shows a massive amount of empathy, you know, from you as a person. And just, I suppose, to say that in that case, you know, the Keating case, there was some suggestion that the driver had been texting, you know, and I do think that, you know, it's a massive issue now, whatever about alcohol. Alcohol is the obvious one, and drugs, you know, also obviously. But it's the pervasive use of the mobile phone that I think has really caused a lot of, you know, more minor and major incidents on the road. And I do think that there is a massive awareness and cultural issue around how we're driving now. And I think our ability to drive, or the way we drive, has deteriorated since COVID, and that's been proven. And I'd agree with Emer wholeheartedly that I don't think any young person, not to pick on young people, but the statistics show that young people tend to be involved in more accidents, but I don't think any young person thinks, oh, I won't get into the car and drive tonight with drink on me because I might end up in prison for 10 years because I you know, killed someone.
We try and emphasize, exactly. We try and sort of use the fact that you could die yourself or be very seriously injured, and that is not 100%. And let alone a custodial sentence.
You know, just taking responsibility, realizing that a car is a lethal, it's a lethal weapon, you know, in certain circumstances. And I'd say in Donegal in particular, you know, why aren't there more posters up on the roads? You know, why, you know, I know the schools do a certain amount with young people. I'm not aware exactly of how much, and but it certainly would be a captive audience for, you know, the likes of the videos, or maybe an enhanced version of the videos or the advertisements that go out on television. Just the sentencing, you know, as a lawyer, I've never really seen that sentencing has the effect of changing behaviour. And I'd agree with you that that is the salient point, Greg, that really it comes back to that point. And I don't think that tougher sentencing, and I think the judges have to take into account the circumstances. And Emer spoke to the circumstances of any given situation. I mean, that lad who unfortunately killed Kieran Keating, he wasn't drunk. It didn't appear that he was, you know, recklessly going into a car, you know, in circumstances where he shouldn't have been. You know, was he texting? That was disputed. You know, so it did seem more careless than intentionally dangerous. And you can see as a lawyer how the judge might have come to that conclusion. But for the family, it doesn't reduce the fact that it feels like too little, because they've lost their brother, their father, their sons.
But as we've already heard, for every family, and this is the law would have to reflect, I suppose, you know, what the majority might want, for every family, they may not get comfort in him being taken from his own family for 10 years either. You know, some might say throw away the key, others might say, right, well, let's rehab. The thing that frustrates me a little though, Catherine, is we have technology, so we could have a system on mobile phones. They've got gyro sensors within them, so if you're travelling above 15, 20 kilometres per hour, that it might say, you know, and obviously we'd have to figure out whether it's passengers or drivers, but there has to be a system whereby someone has said, you know, you are moving quite rapidly, is it safe for you to text, or something, just to give just something to tweak people's minds. We know we can't fiddle with certain controls in the car when the car's moving. Why not have that why not introduce that technology into the phones? That 100% would be realistic. You know,
100%. But also you could apply that logic to speed as well, which probably would be just more important, even that you'd have limiters in cars, which does exist in the likes of Canada, and I'm not sure what other countries, and we haven't introduced that here. And, you know, they are measures that would have a massive effect.
But the greatest resistance from all of that would come from the majority of people.
100%. And you'd have the libertarians saying that it's interfering with our choice and all of that. But really, when it comes to safety of people on the roads, I would be very conservative and very willing to you know, be supportive of measures like that, 100%.
Right. John, your views on it, broadly speaking?
My views are very basic, as they always are on these things. We don't have the enforcement legislation there. We have the legislation, but it's not being enforced. There's nothing can bring Kieran Keating back, and so it is with many other families. And we think of the families up here in Donegal and the wonderful campaigns that have been going on through Park and groups like that. And obviously, they make a big difference, they make a huge difference, but enforcement, Gardaí are not being given the tools, they're not being given the finances to go out and put on checkpoints. And I mean, we're out driving all summer, and I've never seen more reckless driving all over the place there over the August Bank Holiday weekend, driving through junctions at high speeds. Totally reckless driving, yet there isn't a Garda in sight. And when you talk to the Garda, they
don't have a Garda.
That report yesterday.
Let's bring in the Crow report, because, you know, whatever guards are out there, the majority, thankfully, are professional, dedicated and productive. But the Crow report found that in the traffic corps and those out on traffic duty, a significant cohort of officers were disinterested, have a poor work ethic and were ignoring offences on purpose. Now, John, that would bother me more almost, because if anything perhaps could prevent a tragedy, it might be those guards giving a hoot about their job.
I would love to hear what the circumstances are that has brought that report forward, because I don't think there are Garda numbers there to have any meaningful enforcement. I can see it all around me here in this Mufford area, and we'll just mention the fact that the Mufford Garda district doesn't exist any longer. We belong to Inishowen, we belong to Letterkenny.
Well, can I take it out of Donegal? Can I say it's possible that they're supposed to be, say, in Mayo, out there, going around, using the number plate recognition software, stopping people, keeping an eye out for seatbelt wearing, keeping an eye out for speeding, but some of them actually aren't doing it because they don't care.
There's a whole lot of that going on there, but there is dangerous driving going on. And all legislation is only as successful in the manner that it's enforced. Mm. I don't think the road traffic legislation has been enforced. Okay. We haven't invested the kind of money in it. It's okay doing all these shock and awe campaigns. There could be a lot more done through schools to do a very good thing through Donegal.
Well, John, can you stay there for a second? Because I want to come back to this, but I'm unfortunately I've overshot the runway here on the ads, and I want to get the views of all of you on the Crowe Report too and its findings. But I'll return with John for that to finish that point and much more from Catherine Noon and Eamon McGuinness after these. The Crowe Report we referenced, it's a new report that found a significant number of Gardaí working in the road policing unit have deliberately ignored offences. The review by Crowe Consultants is being described as shocking, stark and disturbing. It looked at the behaviour of 100 Gardaí involved in roads policing across six divisions, so it cast the net wide. It found the majority were professional, dedicated and productive, but says a significant cohort of officers were disinterested, had a poor work ethic and were ignoring offences on purpose. The report also outlined issues with training, equipment, fleet and structures. A lot of this stuff we already know, but I don't know what it must be like to be professional and dedicated and productive, to be working beside others that aren't it. And we talk about sort of morale within the force. Maybe that contributes to some of it. A caller says a lack of interest in the job. It's not just down to Gardaí. It's an entire generation of young people who think employers should be grateful they even show up. Never mind do a day's work. OK, I'll come back to you, John, bringing Catherine in on this. I mean, this can't be ignored. This is a really significant report and incredibly troubling.
Yeah, it is very troubling. And I would agree with your comments that, you know, the idea of being a dedicated person working at your job every day and then colleagues just really, you know, not giving a damn. I mean, that must be a very frustrating dynamic. And one thing that was kind of stark reading was the fact that those in supervisory positions, you know, felt that there was a lack of effective sanctions, and that if they felt that if they did sanction, that they'd end up in some sort of industrial dispute situation. So there does seem to be a lot of dysfunction in the policing unit, in the Gardaí, and I don't know exactly what to put that down to, because it can't be. You know, you always underestimate a job. It's a bit like when somebody comes to do work on your house, you say it's only a small job because you haven't a clue how to do it. But, you know, it doesn't seem like the most onerous job to do, to sit on the side of the road and be able to catch a few people, you know, going faster than they should be. And, you know, and you have the equipment to do it. And some of them are going out for the day and coming back with not one offence noted, you know, going back in after a day's work. So are they working at all? So I don't know what percentage it is. I don't think the report clearly states what percentage of people.
Well, the majority is 51, isn't it? So
yeah. You know, it is very worrying, you know, and clearly there are issues with Garda numbers, and they spoke to training and different equipment issues. And I think there is investment going on for better cars and better equipment for Gardaí. And, you know, there are improvements made when it comes to Gardaí around the whole monitoring and, you know, videoing of situations. But it does speak to a rot, really, at the core of the road policing unit, which is very troubling. Very troubling.
And I'm conscious that the work ethic in Donegal could be 100%. We don't know where these six places are. But we also have to remember, too, it's not that long ago before when we had fabricated drink driving checkpoints and all that kind of millions of tests that never, ever happened. So is this something that's carrying on from that? Is there a root and branch review needed of the entire traffic corps? But Eimear, I mean, obviously, you know, we'd all like extra staff and better equipment. But when we go to work and we go to collect our money, I think the majority of us go in there and try to do the best we can.
The majority of us, I'd love to actually see on this report. I find it interesting that it was released the same day that they launched the road safety campaign.
Yeah.
Why that day was it released? There's a number of things. I assume that the report will also take into account the age category or the age profile where the new Gardaí coming onto the system that these issues were with, or where the established, I suppose, guarding maybe near retirement. We'll probably not know them facts, but I'd like to think that the report will go into that and see. I do think it's like in everything. I was chatting to someone who was running a business there recently. He said, on a Monday morning, you'd be lucky if you got people into work. The younger generation have changed completely. They don't seem to care as much about their jobs and their work ethic as we used to. I used to have to go to work if I wanted money to go out at night. I don't know, where's the young one's money coming from now that they don't have to do that?
Yeah, but if you're a guard based in Santry or wherever you might be, Balbriggan, you know, your wages aren't even matching what you need to live. Is that part of it as well?
Yeah,
you know,
but I
don't know.
That is the role that they took on. That is the job that they took on to do, you know, regardless of what the wages are like. Sure, if you don't like them, and yes, I know they're not up to spec and they're not good enough and they need increasing, but they went down that road and that is their career choice and their career path. So they should do it to the best of their ability. I just think the younger, and that's why I'd love to see the report, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but I'd love to see. Yeah.
If we did have that information, are you of the view that maybe the younger Gardaí don't have the same work ethic, or are you suggesting that maybe those are you also saying those edging towards retirement maybe are just running the clock down, or do you believe they'd be more dedicated? I don't know what you're sort of pointing at there.
I think that would be interesting to see them facts.
Yeah,
I think it'd be contagious too, wouldn't it? Like, you know, it'd be a cultural issue if it's something that's happening. You know, younger people are going to be influenced by what older people are doing, colleagues are influenced by what others are doing. But so it's going to speak to a big cultural issue, I think, as well as anything else.
I'm not just saying this, John McAteer, but any Gardaí that I deal with, you know, they're incredibly passionate about their job, especially in the traffic corps. They feel the loss of life very personally and genuinely come in here with a view to try and make a difference, to try and improve safety in our roads. And I'm just thinking on them and others, like these kind of reports, they're so ambiguous to an extent, it kind of would make you feel so hard in my job, because everyone might think I'm the one that's lazy.
I've been inclined to ask a lot of questions about this. Do we have a dedicated traffic corps and the many officers deployed to it across County Donegal? Do we have the manpower and the vehicles? And do we have the resources? My belief is that we don't have that.
We don't.
What happens there, morale has got to fall off. If you have very dedicated policemen, and I know that we have, if they're not being given the resources, or if you're going out on that checkpoint, cut your time in half so you can get more checkpoints in. The report speaks to a lot of things, and there's a lot of other things that it doesn't speak to. Surveillance, manpower, enforcement, these things should be all part of that report, and they should be highlighting where the deficits are. It's not quite doing that. In fact, it's not doing that at all. I mean, 20 years ago, when we had Michael Harrison and people like that there in charge of the Garda Traffic Corps, they were very, very active, but all of a sudden they began losing personnel. And I don't think that has been improved. I mean, you can't police almost 6,000 miles of road in Donegal with two or three Garda.
I get you, but fundamentally, regardless what your job is, I really would be the view, if you don't like your job to the point where you're not doing it, find a different job.
But, you know, to like your job, you would have learned in training school in Temple Moor and all these other places about the resources that there's going to be available to you.
Yep.
And you suddenly come up here to this part of the country where Garda officers are scarce, because most of them are in Dublin, to be quite honest with you.
Listen,
and that's that.
Fascinating insight as always. I wish we had another hour. John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune newspaper. Lovely to see you. Have a wonderful day, please, and weekend.
Thank you very much.
The weather with your beautiful dog. Catherine Noon, thanks so much as always.
Thank you.
Look after yourself. Yeah. Take care. And Eamon McGuinness, look after yourself as well. Thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, that was the Friday panel. And 100 of you texting in, really appreciate it. I'll get to some of those and the weather after these messages.